chapter 12, and we're in eschatology as we started through the whole Genesis, Exodus, coming through all the highlights of talking about end time events. It starts right away in Genesis. But as we get through Ezekiel and Daniel, we start getting into a lot of details. And so in Daniel chapter 12, we didn't get through it last week. I tried to do Daniel chapter 10, 11, and 12 last week. They're all from the year 536 BC, while the Persians were reigning. Daniel is a leader in the Persian government. He's one of their delegates, one of their ambassadors over certain territories and, or, you know, over the leadership and how the kingdom is being run. And now he has this vision during chapters 10, 11, and 12. I'm looking in, I want to read into chapter 12. So I'm going to start in chapter 11, beginning in verse 40. And what we're talking about now, as we went through chapter 11, a lot of that was the Syrian wars of, you know, 160 to, you know, 185, you know, up to the Maccabean Revolt, B.C. But right at verse 36, as we saw last week, it begins talking about future events, meaning everything took place in the Old Testament or in the silent 400 years during the reign of the Greeks, the Seleucids versus the Ptolemies in chapter 11, going up to verse 35. But then that's where Antiochus Epiphanes dies, and it kind of ends the discussion of all the details that were being given in Daniel chapter 11. But in chapter 11, verse 36, it says, "The king will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god and will say unheard of things against the God of gods." Now we're talking about the Antichrist. This is yet a future event, and that is where it ties into chapter 12. And so I want to read through this, kind of set the basis. There is an individual coming, a world leader, that is going to be given power by other nations, other kingdoms, and he will then set up some kind of a world dominion. He's going to try. There's going to be a king of the south, a king of the north, a king of the east coming against him. So he won't be a whole unified world leader, although he's going to try to do these things. He's not going to fully pull it off. But anyway, this king will magnify himself above every god and will say unheard of things against the God of gods. That would be Yahweh. He will succeed, or he will be successful until the time of wrath that is completed for him has been determined must take place. So in other words, he's going to come, and you can't avoid it. I mean, we talk about what can we do? I mean, we're in a time in our culture where what do we do? How do we vote? How do we campaign? How do we protest? What can we do to whatever side you're on? This is going to come. This individual is going to come, and there's other times in history like this, and the believer wants to stand against it and bring the nation back to Christ or back to morality. But there's places in history, and this is one talking about the very last time, where there's nothing you can do about it. God is going to bring some kind of judgment, some kind of divine wrath on your kingdom, on your government, on your civilization, and the believer is going to have to live through it. They're going to be refined, as we see in the book, in the time of the Maccabean Revolt. They are refined, made spotless, and cast into an eternal image. The same thing will take place here during these final days. And it's not just during the Maccabean Revolt and in the eschatological time period. It's throughout history when believers face opposition. It like it says in Romans, all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord. It may not be what you want, but you need to stay faithful. You're going to have to choose to be faithful. And during this time, it says, he will be successful until the time of wrath is completed, for what has been determined must take place. It's going to take place. He's reading, remember, Gabriel is reading to Daniel from the Book of Truth, which it appears to be some heavenly books, heavenly recording of future events and details. He will show no regard for the God of his fathers or for the one desired by women, nor will he regard any god, but will exalt himself above them all. So kind of classify several different, if it be the pagan gods, if it's the Jewish Messiah, if it's any god, the god of his fathers, anything, he's going to put himself above all. Something's going to encourage him, convince him and others that he is indeed some kind of god or above all the other gods. But instead of them, he will honor a god of fortress. It will be a god of war, which will be his own power. A god unknown to his fathers he will honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and costly gifts. Now, a lot of these things I want to give you more detail, I want to explain, we can make suggestions, but even Daniel at the end of this is like, whoa, I've got some, Daniel, I've got questions. And the angel's going to say, Daniel, you go your way. This doesn't concern you. This is sealed up until the time, we'll see, it says it's sealed up until the time of the end. And when a scroll was sealed up, or cuneiform writing in this time was sealed up, it would mean it would be made into some kind of a document and then put into an archive and saved for a future day. If we see in the book of Jeremiah, they would take scrolls and they'd have two scrolls. If you had a legal document, you bought a field, you'd have two documents. One that would be that you could take home with you and you could keep, that you could see the reference. But if it ever came a time to sell the field or negotiate on who actually owned the field, there was a document just like the one you had that was sealed in the temple or wherever they kept them, in the archive. And you could go there and break the seal and see the details. This would be the official document. Your copy of it wasn't the official document. It's what you could show people, and it would stand up in most cases. But if you ever had a court case, you'd go and find it and open the sealed document. And this is now being recorded. It says it's sealed until the time of the end, meaning this is sealed. It doesn't concern you, but when they need to see it, it's going to be recorded and written down. So in other words, it's going to say, Daniel, this is not of your concern. So a lot of these things Daniel didn't understand. And even as we read it, we can talk about it, we can teach it. But one of the things the believer has to do is know these things, because when they start to transpire, that's when you're going to want to make a reference to it. And we can guess at it and speculate, but a lot of times that's all it is. It's speculation. Someday it's going to be historical fact. It's going to be happening in the news. Nonetheless, it says, instead of them, he'll honor a god of fortress, a god unknown to his fathers. He'll honor with gold and silver and precious stones and costly gifts. He'll attack the mightiest fortresses. That would be the strongest nations, the strongest militaries, with the help of a foreign god. Now again, what is that foreign god? Is that like a demonic power? Is that Satan himself that's empowering him? I mean, that would line up with the book of Revelation. And will greatly honor those who acknowledge him. In other words, if you come to his side, if you believe his falsehood, he will reward you and honor you with giving you part of the plunder that he takes. I mean, this is the way things work in the world. We talked about the last couple Sundays, the violent take it by force. Even the kingdom of God or the church or the things of God, the world can get involved and start taking up places in the kingdom of God here in time by force, bringing the world strategy into the church or into Israel or into the religious system of God, the kingdom. And in this age, by force, take positions in it and start advancing the world's agenda within God's kingdom here on earth. Verse 40, at the time of the end. Now, the time of the end, I can show you in a moment in Matthew. I want to go to Matthew tonight if I keep hustling. The time of the end, that is going to be the end of the Gentiles. The time of the Gentiles began with the Babylonians destroying the temple. That was the beginning of the age of the Gentiles, and that's why the statue, from the head of gold down to the feet of iron and clay, it goes through the empires of Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome, and then that morphs into the final state of the kingdom of iron and clay, which is the feet, which is struck by the rock, not cut out by human hands. So the age of the Gentiles began with the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem. It continued even when the Jews were in Jerusalem during Jesus' time. They were still under the control of Rome. They were still under the control of the Gentiles. And Jesus said the Temple Mount would be trampled on until the time of the Gentiles was fulfilled. That is why it's still being trampled on today by Gentiles. The Jews do not have their temple. They sometimes can get up on the Temple Mount, but sometimes it's illegal. Sometimes it causes too much turmoil, and they definitely can't be caught praying on the Temple Mount. If they can pray at the Western Wall, and you can tell when they're praying, but when you get up on the Temple Mount and you can see Muslims praying, but if there's a Jew that's perceived to be praying, even the Israeli police will escort them off because it's too much commotion with the Muslims and the Jews on the Temple Mount, because the Muslims control, the Gentiles in this case, control the Temple Mount. I mean, that's just the way it's interesting. It's still the way it is. So it says in verse 40, at the time of the end, at the time of the end, that is when this age of the Gentiles is over and the Jews get the temple back and they establish their own kingdom. Well, Jesus establishes the kingdom. At that time, the end of the end, the king of the south will engage him in battle. So this is your great Antichrist. He's going to have to fight the king of the south, and the king of the north will storm out against him with chariots and cavalry and a great fleet of ships. Now, understand this again. When you talk about the Antichrist having a thumb on the whole world, he tries, but he's going to have opposition from the south, from the north, from the east, The Jews are going to be against him. He's going to have, he's attempting, but he never really gets the whole thing under his thumb like Jesus Christ will do when he establishes his kingdom. He'll invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. He'll also invade the beautiful land. Many countries will fall, but Edom, Moab, and the leaders of Ammon will be delivered from his hand. He will extend his power over many countries. Egypt will not escape. That would probably be the king of the south. He will gain control of the treasures of gold and silver and all the riches of Egypt, but the Libyans and Nubians, with the Libyans, that's Put, and the Nubians, Cush, in submission. But reports from the east, possibly China, and the north, possibly Russia, if we made it contemporary, we don't know, will alarm him. And he will set out in a great rage to destroy and annihilate many. He will pitch his royal tents beyond the seas at the beautiful holy mountain. So in that time of the end, he's going to move into Jerusalem, move into the Temple Mount, because that is going to become his fortress, his place of operation against these forces of the east, the forces of the north. He will pitch his royal tents between the seas, that's the Mediterranean Sea and the Dead Sea, at the beautiful holy mountain, Mount Moriah, where the Temple Mount is. Yet he will come to his end, and no one will help him. That's the angel Gabriel reading from the Book of Truth about the Antichrist and what is seen and understood from his words. Now, chapter 12. It continues. Again, we got a chapter 12, but the speaking, the teaching, the revelation continues. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. Interesting, because Michael is the prince of Israel. He is just like there's the prince of Persia, the prince of Greece, some kind of angelic, demonic powers in rebellion towards God. They've been assigned places in the world throughout history. You can see this in the writings of Moses. You can see this in Psalms. You can see it in Paul's writings, the rulers and authorities in heavenly places. They're ruling. Michael is Israel's prince. Now, notice right here, it says, at that time of the end, Michael is going to arise. Meaning, well, where have you been for the last 2,000, 3,000 years, Michael? It appears, I would assume, the only way the Temple Mount is going to get destroyed by the Babylonians is if Michael, the archangel who is in charge of Israel, just walks away from it. You understand what I'm saying? Meaning, he walks away and under God's command, walks away and lets them take it out, and it's been under Gentile control. Now, at the time of the end, it says, at that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. Meaning, now, Israel's making a comeback. It's in God's plan. It's the end of the Gentile age, and Michael is back in action. There will be a time of distress as has not happened from the beginning of nations until then. Now that's got to be the last time of the wrath, the last half of the 70th week. That's the word. It's worse than Noah's flood. It's worse than the fall of Jerusalem in 586. It's worse than the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. It's the worst time ever. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name found written in the book, will be delivered. This time there's going to be deliverance. There's no promise of deliverance in 586 when the Babylonians were coming. There's no promise of deliverance with the Rome destruction in 70 AD. They're told when you see the armies coming, flee, because this is the time of destruction. Here it says, many will be delivered at this time because it is the time of the end. The age of the Gentiles is over. Michael arises, and it's time for Israel to be delivered. This is what takes place right here. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. This is the time of the end. Michael arises. Israel's delivered. There's some kind of resurrection taking place. Again, this all doesn't have to happen in an afternoon. Do you understand this? I mean, keep this in mind. Just because these are the events that are taking place, this could be a prolonged period. We're not talking thousands of years, but it may not be just, you know, the afternoon of the second coming all this takes place. This may be a series of events. Just like the Antichrist will arise and go through a series of events during his reign, he'll come to an end at the time, but certain things have to take place. So all these things could be stretched out. It says, those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many in righteousness like the stars forever will shine like stars forever and ever. So during this time of this distress, there's going to be some, just like the Maccabees arose and helped the Jews in, you know, 168 during the Maccabean Revolt for a period of time. Many are going to rise and help Israel at this time. And it says some are wise. They'll shine like the brightness of the heavens. And those who led many in righteousness, now they're receiving their rewards. They helped. They did their job of serving the kingdom of God during this time period. Now, during that state of resurrection, they're being ushered into the kingdom, receiving their rewards. So there's going to be some judgment evaluation taking place. And they'll shine like the stars forever and ever. Now, this is a good go-to verse when you talk about rewards. Paul alludes to it. When you talk about stars, just like Paul says, stars differ from star in their glory. In other words, every star is shining at its full capacity, but some are brighter than others. And those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, that says they will be filled. There's going to be a rewards. Not everybody's going to, socialism is not the way it is in heaven. Everybody gets the same thing in heaven. That's not the that's not the way it is. None of Jesus' parables line up with that idea. None of Jesus' teaching. The rewards are based on your response. And your response is based on how much you hunger for righteousness. How much do you want? How much do you want to be conformed? And how much you respond is how much your desire is, and your desire will be met. You will be shining in the fullness of your glory, but there may be others shining brighter or others shining less depending on their hunger. Now, we're talking about those who are saved. But anyway, that's a side note. Keep that in mind. It's an easy way of explaining how can I be happy in heaven if I don't have as big of shining glory as someone else, or, you know, rewards, or however it's manifested. Because you're shining at your fullest capacity. This is how much you wanted. It's how much you got. Now, again, we're saved by grace, but then you, again, respond and you do the work. You're conforming to the image of Jesus Christ. And you know some people are not being conformed. They're saved, but their growth is not taking place. They're not pursuing righteousness. They're satisfied with just, I don't have to burn in hell. I'm saved. I believe in Jesus. And that's their commitment. Anyway, that's side note, but that you can build right there. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many in righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. You, Daniel, concerning these things right here, this does not, basically what he tells Daniel, this does not concern you. Daniel is maybe 85 years old. He's gone through left the kingdom of Judah, served the entire time during the Babylonian kingdom, and moved into leadership position in the Persian Empire. So Daniel, go your way. This is not going to affect you. This is talking about the time of the end. You don't have to take action. You don't have to store up cans of food in the basement. You don't have to go off and, you know, identify the Antichrist. It's Daniel. Go your way. You're good to go. But Daniel, close up and seal. And that the indication there is not so much seal so no one can understand it, although that may be included. But the idea is close it up and set it aside like you put a document in the archives. Because someday someone's going to want to look at the paperwork. Someone's going to want to see who owns this property. How much did you pay? Who's the inheritance? Where's this? What's the document say? And that someday they're going to look at this. So seal it up. It's for the time of the end. It doesn't concern you. You do not need to understand it, Daniel. It's important that you write it down and get it in the archive. Someone's going to want to read this someday. That's the idea there. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. So between now and then, Daniel, there's going to be a lot of people going back. There's going to be a lot of movement across the earth. They're going to go from several layers of knowledge and learn many things. But in the time of the end, they're going to want to see what you wrote today. In other words, you're here, Daniel, and you know the knowledge level that you've got. But people are going to go a lot of different places through history. People are going to grow in a lot of knowledge in history. But this document is going to be important when they get to the end. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on the brook of the river and one on the opposite bank. One of them said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" Okay, now, you've got Gabriel talking apparently to Daniel, and then you've got someone on the other side of this river, which is the Tigris River that he's standing by, And as they're talking, you may think possibly, and this may, you know, you've got to kind of think through this, but Gabriel's on the side of the river with Daniel. Michael may be on the other side of the river, but then there's this figure, this person who's above the waters. Now, I'm going to say, and commentators would agree, although it's not a slam dunk, you got to think about it, this would be the second member of the Trinity. This is the Son of God. This is the Christ. This is the Son of God. He seems to be the one they're serving. They're asking, they ask questions. And so you can watch the interaction here. He's going to speak. So when you see the man, well, here it is. One of them said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, he's asking him questions. So I think he's asking his Lord. You know, the angels, Gabriel, comes from, he told Zechariah in the temple when he announced John the Baptist's birth, he says, I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of the Lord. He came and told him some information, and Zechariah says, how do I know this is true? It's like, I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of the Lord. It's like, don't ask me how I know. This is, you know, false news. It's like, no, this comes right from the mouth of God. Don't even ask me that question. So that would put Gabriel here listening to the Lord. Nonetheless, the man clothed in linen. Okay, the question was, how long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled? The astonishing things would go back to chapter 11. That's kind of why I wanted to read through this. When the Antichrist arises, who's boastful and sets himself above the gods and does unheard of things and is successful until the time of the end and no one can stop him. These were astounding, astonishing things that he's going to actually elevate himself above the God of gods and get away with it. It's not like he exalts himself above the God of gods and that was not a good idea. It's like he exalts himself and sells the deal. I mean, it looks like he's done it. And the angel says, how long, asking the man hovering above the waters, which I think would be the Christ, the second member of the Trinity, Son of God, Jesus, how long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled? The man, Son of God, clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, lifted his right hand and his left hand towards heaven. Now, it was common to raise your right hand and swear, you know, I swear, this is the truth. I take an oath. What I'm telling you is the truth. But this is, he's going to lift up both hands. I mean, it's not just raising one hand. He's taking an oath with both hands on the Bible. It's not just place your right hand on the Bible and swear. It's like, no, I'm putting both hands on the Bible and holding it to my chest, telling you this is the truth. So it's like an extreme expression of his commitment to these details. The man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river lifted his right hand and his left hand towards heaven, and I heard him swear by him who lives forever. So the Son of God swearing by the Father God, meaning not swearing at him, but by holding, you know, holding him account. I mean, he's going to observe these things take place, saying, watch, this is what he swears by. He says, it will be for a time, times, and half a time. In other words, how long will this last? Now, when will it, that's the question I was asked. When will this happen? The angel asked, how long are these astonishing things going to take place that this Antichrist is going to rise up and have that kind of power in the earth? Doesn't ask, when will it end? When Jesus is coming back? Ask, how long will it be? And the Son of God raises both hands and says, I swear by him who lives forever and ever, it's going to be a time, times, and half a time. And, of course, we'll talk about that in just a moment. Times, times, and half a time. When the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be complete. In other words, it's going to continue until Israel is on its last thread. They're being hunted down by all the nations. They're surrounded, and there's not going to be anything left. They're going to be they're almost destroyed. Then I'm going to stop it, and I'm going to come back and bring deliverance. I heard, Daniel says, but I did not understand. It's like, okay, the angel says, how long will these astonishing things with the Antichrist overruling the people of God and God himself, how long is that going to last? And then God answers, a time, times, and half a time. And then he says, until when the power of the holy people would be Israel. We're talking here about Israel. We're not talking, I mean, Israel in the being the righteous people, being holy people, considered saints, set apart for God. We can align them and find similarities with the church. But this is not talking about the church people here. This is talking about the people. It talks, the whole vision is about the nation of Israel. Interesting, in the book of Daniel, it's written in two languages. It's written in Arabic or Aramaic, and it's written in Hebrew. It's that way in some translations coming out of the Hebrews. We've known that for years. And then in 1948, when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls and they pulled the book of Daniel out, part of it was written in Aramaic, part of it was written in Hebrew. Still, I mean, it was that way in Jesus. It's been that way, meaning it appears, it's a slam dunk. It appears that Daniel, when he was addressing Nebuchadnezzar and the Gentiles, he wrote in Aramaic, the language of the nations. When he's now talking about 70 weeks are decreed for your people Israel, he writes it in Hebrew. So you can tell by going to the Dead Sea Scrolls, is he talking about to the Gentiles or is he talking to Israel? If it's in Aramaic, he's talking to the Gentiles. If it's in Hebrew, the Gentiles don't need to know this. I'm talking to the people of God. Not that it's in code, but that was his focus. He's a delegate. He's an ambassador. So he's used to speaking the language of the people he's addressing. That's his job in the Babylonian court and under Cyrus and Darius. I heard, Daniel says, but I did not understand. So I asked, my Lord, what will the outcome of all this be? What's going to happen? How is this going to end? The angel asks, when or how long will it last? Daniel says, yeah, but where are we going with this? I mean, all the people are overrun, and then they're delivered, but there's hardly anybody left. He replied, go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. That's the second time. Daniel, your job was to hear and record. Now get that in the archive, document it, because it's going to be important for people at another time. They're going to go many places in the world. I'm repeating it. And they're going to grow, and a lot of knowledge is going to be increased around the world. But this document is going to be crucial. So you don't need to understand it, Daniel. You don't need to understand these things. These words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Many will be purified. Now, here's the whole goal. This is the second time. This was the same phrase used in the Maccabean revolt. Why are these things being allowed to take place? Why doesn't God just come back and save the world? Why does he just come back and just deliver us? Well, right here. Because he's letting us grow. He's letting us, first of all, receive Christ, get saved from his wrath. That's what people say. You know, why doesn't God just come back? Well, if God just came back, I mean, are you really ready for him to come back? I mean, it's like, what happens if he came back, you know, before you were saved? I mean, don't you want to get saved? And now that you're saved, do you want to come back and evaluate you now? Or do you want to have some time to go through some tests and trials to mature? It's like, in the American mind, we don't want any tests or trials. We just want the good life. Well, okay, the good life is going to pass away. I mean, if it's going to pass away in 2021 or if it's going to pass away sometime in the future, whatever you've got is passing away. What's valuable is salvation in Christ and you're maturing and being conformed into his image. So again, this is not talking about how good life is. This is talking about during this process of being overrun by the Antichrist or any kind of opposition, what's going to take place. Daniel, the point is, seal this up, Daniel. It's not for you. My point for you, he could say, was many will be purified, made spotless, and refined. Again, that's purified means examined. Spotless means cleansed, meaning they've examined, found the weaknesses, and fixed it. And then refined or fused. That means cast into an image. It'd be similar to doing a welding joint or soldering a joint, and you get it all soldered. Now you put some pressure on it and find the weak spots. When you put the pressure on it, then you find the water spraying out, shut the water off, drain the pipes, dry it up, and fix the leak. And then, in other words, many are going to be pressurized, their weaknesses are going to be exposed, they're going to be purified, we're going to fix that, and once they're fixed, we're going to cast them in an eternal image. Now that's what Jesus Christ is doing in your life. It's like, whoa, 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 wait, I just want the best life now. No, no, no. He's putting pressure on, finding weaknesses, fixing those weaknesses, conforming you into the image of Jesus Christ, because that's what's going to last forever. Oh, I just wanted a good life now. Well, that's past. I mean, it's so different. And yet you can see how this is flowing. Okay, watch. Many will be purified, made spotless, and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand. In other words, the wicked will go right back to, I want my best life now. I don't want any weaknesses exposed. I don't want to be purified. I'm not even thinking about eternity. I'm thinking about right now. Okay, the wicked will not understand this. The wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise, they will understand. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished, it goes on and says, and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335th day. What was that? Well, here we go. I'm gonna explain a few things here. We know time, times, half a time is 3.5 years. Time is 1 year, times is 2 years, half a time is half a year, 1, 3.5, 3.5 years, right? I mean, that's the general understanding of that. We know that in 3.5 years, there are 42 months. A prophetic month, again, we got 30-day months, 28-day months, 31-day. The typical 30-day is 30 days. So let me see if I can do the multiplication here. That's 1,260 days. So times time and half a time is 42 months of 30 days, which equals a total of 1,260 days. That's absolute. Now, what is being said right here is we've got the 70th week, and this is said in Daniel. The 70th week is yet to come. It's a seven-year period. One more week. A week in this ideal is a period of 7 days, 7 weeks, 7 months. In this case, it's 7 years. There's going to be oppression of the saints for a times, time, and half a time right here. And then Israel's going to be protected when they're being refined for a times, time, and half a time. There's both of these are identified in the book of Daniel. This is going to be a crushing, and this is talking about the saints. This is talking about here about Israel. It's very clear, and it matches 168, 165, the Antiochus Epiphanes, where he comes in and sets up an abomination of desolation on the Temple Mount. It mentions that in Daniel earlier when they're going through the Maccabean or the Syrian wars. But Jesus makes reference to it also in Matthew, and we just see it here, that at the halfway, Daniel or Paul says very clearly, at the halfway point, at 3.5 years, the Antichrist is going to go in the 70th week. The temple is going to be rebuilt here. The Antichrist is going to confirm a covenant for 1 week with Israel at that time. Israel's going to rebuild their temple right here. Is their temple. And they're going to begin worshiping, sacrificing in the Antichrist temple. This is not the Lord's. I mean, they built it for the Lord. They're offering sacrifices to the Lord, but it's in a treaty with the Antichrist. It's still under the control of the Gentiles. Don't think the time of the Gentiles ends here. The Jews are given the Temple Mount for a time during the age of the Gentiles, the last 7 years. Now, at the halfway point, when he needs to make himself strong, he's got trouble in the south, the Antichrist got trouble in the north, got trouble coming from the east, he's going to go into the Middle East and set himself up in the fortress of the temple. He's going to stop the sacrifices, and he's going to set himself up in the Temple Mount and set up an abomination that causes desolation. Now, Antiochus Epiphanes set up an altar to Zeus, maybe an image of Zeus, an idol of Zeus, had his own face on the idol because he thought he looked like Zeus or wanted Zeus to look like him. But that was what took place, say, in 168 B.C. That was an abomination of desolation, but it wasn't this one because Jesus says in 30 A.D., when the abomination of desolation is set up, It's time to start running because it's going to be set up. He mentions this thing also, and he says, as spoken of by the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. So Jesus goes through those sealed documents, in the sense that, you know, they are recorded, and he begins to already in 38 AD draw information out and say, get ready, this is coming. So this would be 3.5 years, 42 months, or 1,260 days. The same thing over here. From here to the end of the 70th week is 1,260 days. Now we mention 1,290 days, and then we mention, what is it, 1,335 days. Now, this is all going to make sense and is all the map or the timeline or the background for interpreting many Bible prophecies. Will I be able to explain it to you completely? No, but I can give you a chart. Yes, I can. Here it is. And this is what you see here is the second half of the tribulation. You've got 7 years. If you're on the Monday or Tuesday night class, we've had a big chart down there. The 70th week would have started here, and this is where the Antichrist makes a treaty. The Israelites have the Temple Mount. But right here, the Jewish worship in the Temple Mount is abolished. Two things. It's abolished, and the abomination that makes desolation or desolate is set up. The Antichrist sets up the... He ends the Jewish time here, and now there's 1,260 days left, or time times and half a time, 42 months, 3.5 years, or 1,260 days. Then it mentions 1,290 days, so that would be 30 days more. If you add 30 days to 1,260, you get 1,290 days. So you've got, this is the end of the time of the Gentiles. But then there's a 30-day period here that is identified by the Lord. And then it says, and blessed are those who make it to the 1,335th day. Well, what's that? That's 45 days more. So you're going to add from the 1,260, you're going to add 30 days, and then that means something took place in that month. And then 45 days, and then at that point, if you're still here, you're blessed. Congratulations, you made it. It's like, what? Made it through what? Well, we got to look at some scriptures. And then apparently, here's the kingdom age. Now, this is important. We saw this in Ezekiel. We talk about the battle of Gog and Magog, and we suggested, or I suggested, and you got to get out of your Sunday school mind that, you know, someday Jesus is going to split the sky and come back, and all of a sudden you're just mowing the yard one day, and everything's going normal. All of a sudden, boom, Jesus is back. It's like, whoa, and all of a sudden you're glowing, and it's like, whoa, I don't have a sin nature. It's like, oh, look, the grass is all golden, and it's like, oh, we're in the kingdom of God. It's like, well, that was cool, and it's like, now what do we do? Okay, that's really an exaggerated spiritual concept of the second coming. You understand there's going to be, God is not just going to just stop history. He's not going to stop time. He's not going to stop. If he's going to come back and set his kingdom up on this earth, which apparently he is, I can give you several indications. One, the statue of gold, silver, then bronze and iron with the feet of clay was all in the Middle East, starting with, you know, well, Babylon and Greece, or Persian, Greece, Rome. It all centered around that area. Jesus, it says, the rock not cut up by human hands hits the statue at that point in the feet in the timeline, and that stone becomes a kingdom where those kingdoms were. So he doesn't strike the statue here and then bounce off and go into heaven and make a kingdom in heaven. He comes back and sets a kingdom up right in the Middle East, right around the Mediterranean world. He's going to take over the nations. He's not going to destroy the nations. He's going to judge the nations. There's going to be a judgment of the nations, and then not a dispersion of them, not a, you know, everybody's going to just be one people. He's going to be the emperor, but there's going to be kings under him ruling their nations, and the different nations are going to respond in different ways. They're going to have their own cultures, their own leadership under his rulership. Just like Cyrus was the emperor, Darius was the king of Babylon under Cyrus. And you can understand what I'm saying. So when Jesus comes back, it's not going to be in the afternoon and then everything's set up. We've got to work with time. And if you know what takes place here, Not only is the Antichrist trying to rule and reign, what is taking place here, the sign of the Son of Man appears, depending on how you put your sign of the Son of Man coming, but he's going to appear and he's going to pour, the nations see him come back and say, hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. And then he's going to pour out, the sound the seven trumpets of wrath, and then he's going to pour out the bowls of wrath. They're going to be poured out on the Antichrist kingdom while Israel is in hiding being protected. Now, again, at this time, I would believe the church has gone up in the rapture. I think it's going to take place right around this time. Some have a pre-trib rapture. You can go with that if you want to and make it work, but that's not our discussion tonight. But Jesus is going to be apparently in the atmosphere, and that's explaining why you've got so many cosmic events like the sun being blocked, and the moon turning like goat skin or goat hair, stars falling from the sky, not being seen. Because, I mean, the atmosphere, you've got tsunamis, you've got earthquakes, you've got islands disappearing. I mean, you've got a major, I mean, he's destroying the planet. You talk about global warming. I mean, he's lighting it up right here. One of the wrath is right here. They're screaming out because the sun is scorching them. It's like, you want some global warming? Let me help you out. And again, I mean, that's what he's doing. So in other words, if you read that literally, which I do, there's those who receive the mark of the beast, they've got boils and plagues breaking out on them because they received the mark of the beast. You just hope it's not the COVID virus vaccination. It's like, how are we going to know these things? And hopefully we do. That's not pro or con. I'm just saying something weird like that's going to happen, and it's going to be just natural. It's going to slip into it. Anyway, it's going to be devastated. I mean, there's not, by the time he gets done pouring out the bowls, there's not going to be, life can't go on. I mean, the waters are polluted. We're going to have a third of the water destroyed, and then by the end here, we're going to have all the water has turned to blood. There's no fresh water. There's no salt water. You've got hours left for humanity to survive on the planet. Otherwise, we're all going to die. That's the way it's created. Now, he returns right here. There's the battle of Armageddon. The Antichrist got problems with the King of the East, the King of the North. Jesus comes in. They all turn and unite finally. You ever seen different political parties and different nations all unite against one person to try and take them down? Maybe you can think of someone. Well, that's exactly what you've got right here. You've got the King of the East fighting the Antichrist. You've got the King of the North. They're all coming against each other. And then all of a sudden, oh no, time to unite. And they've got a unified problem right here, which is the coming of the Son of Man coming back to the earth. And now you're going to have, when he comes back here, he arrives here at the end of the 1,260 days. Then you're going to have a 30-day period, and I don't know what this is for, and a 45-day period, and I do not know what that is for. But they are, if we're going to go literal, if you want to go figurative, you've lost me. If you're all going to go figurative, you all got your own truth, your own figures, you can come up with whatever you want to. But if you're going to go with the text and read this hermeneutically correct, like you're supposed to read the Constitution, what does the text say? This is 1,260 days, 3.5 years, 42 months, time, times, and half a time in representation. This is 30 days because it's 190 days, 30 days longer than 1,260 days. And this is a 45-day period, which is 45 days longer than 1,290. So you've got these two sets of time right there. Something's taking place. Something is marked at the end of 30 days, and something is marked at the end of 45 days. Now I'm going to read the text to you again. I'm going to add some more scriptures to it and get some insight. Not that I've got the final answer to all of this, but this is, my friends, this is solid information. Now, what this means, how it applies, how it's all going to come together, it's sealed up until the time of the end. It's in document form waiting until it needs to be broken open. So, now I see. But here's what it says again. Let me go back and say this. I've got to read this just because this is who I am. I'm in verse 6 of chapter 12. One of the angels said to the man, Jesus, the Son of God, clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river. He seems the one they're asking questions of. How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled? How long is these astonishing things this Antichrist is going to do? How long will it be? The man clothed in linen, who is God himself, who was above the waters of the river, lifted his right hand and his left hand towards heaven, and I heard him swear by him who lives forever. Now, again, you say, well, that's God swearing by himself. Well, that's exactly what happened in Genesis, where God swore by himself because there's no one higher. Hebrews picks that up. So again, it's God the Son and God the Father communicating. It's God swearing by God, swearing by some unchangeable person. I heard him say, swear by him who lives forever and ever. It will be for a time, times, and half a time. That's so I mean, seriously, it's going to be a miserable 3.5 years, but it's only 3.5 years. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's like when this kicks in, when the worship is stopped and the abomination is set up, you've got 1,260 days. You've got 42 months. You've got time, and half a time, and it's over. That's how long this is going to last. That's how long the Antichrist is going to rage against the God of heaven. It says, when the power of the holy people has been finally broken, somewhere over here, all these things will be completed. Now, we could go to Zechariah and read about the power of the holy people being broken, and we will as we move through these books. Daniel says, I heard, but I did not understand. And you can understand why. My Lord, talking probably to the Lord himself, hanging above the water there, what will the outcome of all this be? He replied, go your way, Daniel. And again, that's not saying I'm not going to answer. It's like, Daniel, this is basically saying, this does not affect you. You'll never see these days. Because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end, and you're not living in the time of the end of the age of the Gentiles. In fact, Daniel's the one who introduced the age of the Gentiles with the vision of the statue. Many will be purified and made spotless and refined. That's the focus of what's taking place between you and the end of time. I'm purifying people. But the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand. They'll just blow this off and just keep right on going, not understanding anything. But those who are wise, they will understand it. From Daniel's day until the final days, there will be people who are wise, who are seeking God, that will understand this and take action and set their values on their character being refined instead of having their best life now. From the time, now watch it, here it is, verse 11. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished, right here, the abolishing of the worship, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up. Here it is set up. When the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. So from this halfway point, and it is the halfway point. I mean, I don't know if you, by the hour to the minute to within the couple weeks, within a couple months, but it's considered the halfway point of the 7-year period. Again, how precise is it? You know, you got a stopwatch, boom, now, or is it, you know, happening this month, this time of the year? Anyway, that happens. From that time, there's 1,290 days. Now, that's 30 days longer. That's a full prophetic month longer than the 1,260 days from 42 months from time, times, and half a time, if you make that makes sense. Now, some would say, and again, you'd say, maybe this is a general time, times, and half a time is generally about 3.5 years. More specifically, it's going to be 1,290 days. So instead of saying it specifically, it's 1,260 days, maybe to get a bit precise, it's 1,290 days. It's still close enough. It's still time, times, and half a time. That may be what it means. The problem with that is there's 6 times in the Bible, I've got them written down here, Daniel, several places of Revelation, even the words 1,260 days comes up. I mean, so it is a prophetic definition of times, and half a time, or 3.5 years, 42 months. All 4 of these are used. Time, times, and half a time, 42 months, or the halfway point, 1,260, they're all used in the Bible. So it's not like you're just guessing at 1,000. It says 1,260. So from the abomination being set up until it is destroyed is 1,290 days, which is interesting. Now, allow me to speak at this. And again, this needs to be corrected or adjusted. If Jesus comes back here, he's been pouring out wrath, the trumpets and the bowls, depending on if he's far, far away in heaven shooting him down from the atmosphere or if he's actually appeared in the sky like the sign of the Son of Man appears he would be. He's doing this. When he comes down here, there's still going to be battles that are going to... He's not just going to come down and boom, everybody drops dead. There's going to be things like that happening, but there's going to be a series of events. Even the tribe of Judah is going to join with him in battle. So he's not just coming back and just slaughtering. In your Sunday school mind, he appears, all the heathen die, and all believers get glorified, and we're having a picnic in the Kidron Valley at the end of the day. It's like, wow, this is a great day. In the Bible, there's battles that need to be fought. We even suggested Gog and Magog may fit in here or sometime after this when there's some kind of a rebellion. Let me say this, because at the end of the thousand-year reign, because this period is going to be a thousand-year kingdom reign on earth, whatever a thousand years means, let's say a thousand years, there's going to be a revolt. Can you imagine? This helps clarify what kind of climate we're living in. We're living in a world where Jesus Christ is ruling and reigning as a government official. He's ruling and reigning like Nebuchadnezzar or Ashurbanipal or Cyrus or Alexander the Great over people. Some people are born again and glorified. Some people are still in their normal bodies, and we can explain all that later, apparently. But there is going to be, not everybody's going to be happy. There's still going to be arguments on Facebook or Twitter. There's still going to be, in fact, Jesus will be doing some censoring himself. He makes it very clear. It's like, no. If you don't worship me, I'm not going to send you rain. It's like, talk about climate control. You decided not to come. You don't need to come. But remember, I control the rain, so shut it off. Well, that's a tyranny. Well, yeah, I guess, he's the Lord. And so after a while, people decided we don't want him to be our king. We got our own ideas. We got our own philosophy. They're gonna create postmodern reality again all by themselves or something, and they're going to be lead a revolt against him at the end of the thousand years. So keep that in mind. This age of prosperity and the kingdom age is still going to need to be ruled. Well, it tells you in Genesis and Psalms that he will, when the scepter will come rightfully to the one who it belongs to Shiloh, and when he receives it, he'll rule it with an iron, like with an iron scepter. He's not just handing out butterflies and balloons. He's ruling the world, the nations, with an iron scepter. He's in complete control. You can see why that would be unnerving to certain people, especially if they disagree. Nonetheless, this period right here, this 30 days, could be the battles and the cleanup. Then the 45 days, let's read this 45 days. Here it is. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished, I'm in verse 11, and the abomination that caused desolation is set up, there'll be 1,290 days. So it means that the abomination that is set up here, it will not be taken down until 1,290 days. The sign of the Son of Man appears shortly after it's set up and pours out his wrath, I think, if you read Revelation. Jesus appears on earth here, battles begin, but he doesn't just go in there and kick over the abomination of desolation or just doesn't magically disappear. They seem to have to fight their way through. And finally, it takes 30 days for the temple to be cleansed and reestablished. Now, if you go back to the Maccabean revolt, similar things happened. They took Jerusalem, then they had to take, or took Judea, they took Jerusalem, then they had to take the Temple Mount, and then they had to go through a period of cleansing the temple. So that would take 30 days of actually getting that thing taken out. He returns, but it's still in the temple. Do you understand what I'm saying? How does this all work? But it's not just magic. There's actual movement, wars, battles, territory to be taken, and then finally the cleansing and setting up of the temple. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Then it says this, blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335th day. So if you consider this battles and clean up the first 30 days, why do you got to wait 45 days more? Well, if you do, blessed that you waited that long and you made it that far. Because Jesus makes it very clear, there's going to be judgments right here. In fact, let's go to, first of all, what time is it getting to be? Do we got a clock up there? Okay. Is that 58 or 53? I'm going to say it's 53. Okay, yeah. Good. Let's go back to Ezekiel. Ezekiel, this could take place right here. Ezekiel chapter 20. Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 34. In fact, in the NIV Bible, starting in verse 30, it's titled, you know, in the NIV translation, in the study Bible, it's titled Judgment and Restoration. See, judgment, and then I write judgments and government setup, meaning they're going to have to set up, we're going to have to restore, meaning the Jews are going to be brought back to the land. Government officials are going to have to be set up, in fact, including Daniel. Daniel will be given his allotted. They're going to tell us Daniel will go his way and receive his allotted inheritance. Well, if he was a ruler under Nebuchadnezzar and he was a ruler under Cyrus, I assume that when the Lord sets up his kingdom, Daniel's not going to be, you know, just, you know, a custodian somewhere. He's going to have some kind of rulership. So there's going to have to be some kind of government setups placed in there. Anyway, I'm going to jump down into verse chapter 20, verse 34. I'm looking for it. Here, verse 34. I will bring you from the nations and gather you from the country. He's talking to the Israelites. The Lord is, through Ezekiel. Where you have been scattered with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm and with an outpoured wrath. You see, with outpoured wrath. The reaching out and gathering is Israel. The outpoured wrath would be this period right here. I will bring you into the desert of the nations, and there, face to face, I will execute judgment upon you. He's going to bring the Jews in, and he's going to execute judgment on them. He's going to evaluate them. He's going to evaluate them not on just being a Jew, but how did you respond to the Jewish Messiah? As I judged your fathers in the desert in the land of Egypt. So the Jews are going to be gathered. Yay, we're going back to Israel. You're going back to Israel to meet the Messiah, who's going to judge you on what you did with the Messiah. So I will judge you, declares the Sovereign Lord, capital L-O-R-D, which means Yahweh. I will take note of you as you pass under my rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. I will purge you of those who revolt and rebel against me. So in that gathering of Israel, they're going to, like a shepherd has a rod, they pass underneath, he evaluates the sheep, which ones are his. Some are his, they're going to come in. Others that rebelled against him are going to be sent away. Now we're going to see the same thing in Matthew. Although I will bring them out of the land where they are living, yet they will not enter the land of Israel. Then you will know that I am the Lord. There's your promise. He says, I will bring Israel back. I'm going to gather Israel back right here. He says, but when I do, some of you are not going to get to stay in Israel. You're going to go out into the wilderness, and I'm going to judge you. That's the Valley of Jehoshaphat. We can see it in other verses. It's just you can follow the Kidron Valley down, and as it runs into a ravine or a wadi down in towards the Dead Sea, there's an area right there called the Valley of Jehoshaphat. That's where Jehoshaphat's band marched and went into battle. That's where the judgment seat is going to take place, where Israel is going to be judged. Some of them are going to be welcomed into the kingdom. Some of them are not. Right there says it. Although I take you out of the nations, you may not get a stay in Israel. And then you will know that I am the Lord, because I'm doing God's judgment. This is what Jesus said in the book of John. He says, the Father has appointed me to judge. Now, go to Matthew 25. You're going to see the same thing. Now you're going to see that's the Lord saying it through Ezekiel. Now you're going to see Jesus say it in Matthew 25. And now if you know Matthew 24 is the eschatological teaching of Jesus. In fact, I was going to go look at a couple of those verses. But he continues to use some illustrations on into chapter 25 and 26. I'm looking in Matthew 25. There, chapter 25, verse 1, you've got the parable of the 10 virgins. 25, verse 14, you got the parable of the talents, meaning he gave everybody according to his ability, and then they all brought back what they produced. Some weren't faithful, some were a little faithful, some were more faithful. Some got nothing, some got 10, some got, you know, depending on how they handled what they were given. Star shining from star in glory. I'm going to chapter 25, verse 31. Now, you got to believe that Jesus is referring to Ezekiel 20 and Ezekiel 34 when he reads this. Here's what Jesus says. Just read this literally. Just read this as if what he says he means. When the Son of Man, that would be Jesus, comes in his glory. When does he come in his glory? Well, the sign of the Son of Man appears here. He pours out his wrath here. He appears on the Mount of Olives and in battle here. And now he's, watch, When he appears in glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. That he's not in heaven, otherwise you've gone to heaven and he's sitting in heaven in heavenly glory. He's come in glory. Just like he departed, the angel says he'll come back the same way he left. He's come in glory and he's sitting on his throne in heavenly glory. He's sitting in the valley of Jehoshaphat. Or according to Ezekiel 20, he's sitting in the wilderness and he's judging. Now, in Ezekiel, he was judging Israel. He gathered them from all the nations. And now, how did they respond to him individually? Now it says in verse 32, all the nations will be gathered before him. See, not Israel's going to be judged, but now he's got to bring all the nations to judge the nations. So you understand, 45 days? I mean, it's like, well, can't we just do that when he comes back? He just like snaps his fingers. Well, no, there's going to be face-to-face in real time accounts given as he evaluates. He always says all of them are going to pass under his rod, and he's going to be able to pick out the ones that are his and send the others away. Now the nations are gathered, will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. Now, this is not the judgment of Israel. That's already taking place. We talked about that in Ezekiel. This is the nations. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right. Now, here it is. See, that's what I think. See right here? 1,335 days. It says, Daniel says, you know, you'll be blessed if you are patient and wait for that day. Now he says, the ones on his right. He says, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. He says, welcome, take your inheritance. I got a place for you in my kingdom. That's what this is referring to. It's, you're entering the kingdom. You've gone through the judgment. Israel's already gone in. Now everybody's been taken out of the nations and brought in. And then he says, here's the story. He says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous, these are the righteous people, will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something? I mean, you just came out of heaven and landed here in glory in your, with your throne. It's like, I've never seen you before. I've never seen you before in my life. I definitely didn't see you in prison. When did we see you thirsty or give you something to drink? When did we see you in a stranger and invite you in or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in person and go to visit you? The king will reply. Now, again, I don't want to read too much into this verse, but it's sitting right there. He's just got done having the Israel being gathered from the nations and passed under his rod, and he let some come into Israel. The others, he wouldn't let in. They're going somewhere else. Judgment. Way. Now he brings the nations, and now he does the same thing with the nations. And they says, when did we see you? He's the righteous. When did we see you and feed you and clothe you? Then the king, the Lord, the Son of God, the second member of the Trinity, Jesus Christ, the king, will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did to one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did it to me. In context, Israel was being persecuted for 1,260 days. Remember, Daniel says, they'll be overpowered. I mean, they're not going to have the mark of the beast. They're not going to have a place to run. They're going to be living in the wilderness. Now the nations are going to be judged. There's Jews in every nation, and they're identified. And if the Jews, if the nations realize who the Jews are, if they realize who the sign of the Son of Man is, if they understand anything about eschatology from the book that was sealed up and ready for the time of the end, he says, when you saw the Jews being persecuted and hunted down by the Antichrist, he pursued them into the wilderness. I was protecting them, and you helped them out. You visited them in prison. They were in context. It's not necessary. He says, when he's seated in glory, he's going to gather the nations. He's not judging all the wicked all through time. He's judging in context. When he lands in glory, is on his throne, the nations at that time are gathered. When you did it to the, and Israel's just gone through the judge. They've just passed through the rod. He could just say, see, this, you took care of these people. He says, because you took care of them and you realized that I was the Son of God, that I was the judge, that I was the creator, that these were my people, you treated them right. And when you did the least of these, you were helping with my plan. Come on in. Again, that may be reading. You got a general understanding of that. That seems to be in the context because this, again, is after chapter 24, and there's three stories given here, three accounts given to explain these times of his return. Again, it applies of all time. Anytime you visit someone that's hurting or help someone, you're doing it for, you know. But he says, brothers of mine, I mean, he's the king of Israel. These are his people. He's just separated them from the nations. And while they're in the nations, these people took care of the Jews in their nations. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They will answer. They will also answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry? I mean, if we would have saw you need, I mean, you're the king, you're the God, we would do anything for you. He says, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? He will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. That's what takes place next. I'm going to go back to Daniel and finish that last verse, please, and then we are done. Again, that's just explaining. Again, there's much. This is a framework. This is just a map. This is a timeline. And there will be many verses that will explain what takes place in those days. I believe this is including battles and the cleanup. This is including the judgment and the setting up of the government and then the kingdom. So the kingdom would actually start 75 days after, you know, Jesus arriving on Mount of Olives, if you want to say that, or whenever he returns, however, if it's in, you know, Zechariah's return, or if it's in Isaiah coming out of Basra, in Revelation, whatever you're going to identify that moment as or the place, you've got 75 days of battles, cleanup, judgments, government setup, and then welcome to the kingdom. And that's where it ends right here. Daniel chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 11, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. That's when it's torn down. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of 1,335th day, or 45 days. Blessed is the one, and that's exactly what he says in Matthew 24, come in, blessed those blessed by my Father. As for you, Daniel, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. In other words, just like this, you'll arise right here, and you'll face an evaluation here, and you'll be welcomed into the eternal state or the kingdom age in his resurrected state and receive his allotted inheritance. And you would assume it's going to be some kind of governmental position, some kind of leadership position. I mean, he's a prophet. He served God in Judah, in Babylon, in Persia. Jesus referred to his prophecies. You think Daniel's going to have something, but it's allotted to him. He's got his place right there. That ends the prophecies that we see eschatologically in the book of Daniel. We'll continue marching through the prophets here of the minor prophets and through the Old Testament, picking out the highlights of the eschatology in the weeks to come. Thank you for being here. Father, we do thank you for your truth. We thank you for the opportunity to look into these things. We do ask that we'd handle them diligently, that we'd not add our own ideas or thoughts or twist them to our own agenda, but allow the word to transform us, that we would be conformed into the image of Jesus Christ and not try to conform Jesus into the image of the world. Father, we ask that we may be purified, made spotless and refined, and cast into an image that matches your kingdom. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.